Decapod, the podcast for the Roberts Lab NPRB-funded project investigating the effects of bitter crab disease and temperature changes on Southeast Alaskan tanner crabs.
So, it's kind of about the infection, like, let's see.
Well, I guess one thing I should tell you, too. Did I ever tell you about Sherry Timoney's crab experiment? Okay. So Sherry Timoney is at University of Alaska in that university building that's right next door to the Juno Lab.
Yeah.
And she's a crustacean physiologist, and she works mostly on molting and hormones. In the eyeball of crabs is an organ that produces a hormone that inhibits molting. When that organ stops producing that hormone, then the animal molts. Okay? So you can force crustaceans to molt by cutting off their eyes.
Whoa.
Eye stalk ablation. Well, they regenerate. It's all very weird. But you cut off their eyes, and you no longer have molt-inhibiting hormone being produced, so the animal will molt. So Sherry, I forget what she was doing, but she decided she needed animals that could molt. So she went out to Juno, and she collected out the water there, and she collected a number of crabs that looked healthy to her. She's very much aware of Manidinium, brought them in the lab, and ablated, that's what they call it, ablated the eye stalks. All of the crabs developed raging infections and died from hematidinium.
Wow.
So her thought was that they were all infected. She stressed them by cutting off their eyeballs. The hematidinium went crazy, and you know, and it became apparent they were all infected. She didn't believe that they caught it in the lab, and you know, I think it went too fast for that. So then she got the idea, ooh, this is a great way to study the final stages of hematidinium. You go out and get a bunch of crabs, you cut off their eye stalks, it makes the hematidinium go crazy, and the crabs die, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she went out and got a bunch of crabs, brought them in the lab, cut off the eyes, and nothing happened.
Okay.
Nothing happened. Nobody got sicker, nobody died, nothing happened. So. There's a lot that we don't understand.
Yeah.
So who knows why, you know, the crabs... And I think she went out at the same time of year. I think she planned it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe now that I know this is basically just exploratory research, but why were the crabs held in the same tank when half were infected and half were uninfected? Like, why didn't you want to keep them separate to keep the uninfected throughout
it? Okay, so that's a very good question. It would have been, in my mind, desirable to keep all the crabs separate.
Mm-hmm.
We would have needed 180 tanks and plumbing for 180 tanks.
Okay.
And temperature control for 180 tanks.
Yeah.
So that was just logistically not going to happen. If you're going to separate the crabs, like let's say you separated the infected from the uninfected, so instead of having 9 tanks, we had 18,
mm-hmm.
then if something happened, well, then how could you positively say that the crabs in the negative warm water tank reacted this way because it was negative in warm water and not just because of the tank they were in? It's harder to control for tank effects.
Okay.
So then you put them together, and then you know that all the warm water crabs are in the same environment.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If we would have done 180 tanks, you would have randomized them so that you didn't have all the cold water crabs here. I mean,
right.
You would have checkerboarded it.
Okay.
Just all over the place to do it properly.
Yeah.
So that if there was an effect from being in this corner, like it's close to the heater up in the ceiling,
mm-hmm.
then the noise from that would have been smoothed out by having the rest of that treatment group over there and over there and over there.
Okay.
If you put them all under the heater, then...
Right. That's...
Yeah. Which is, you know, another difficulty with that lab because...
Yeah.
So, hence all the massive insulation and the lids and everything else, trying to control the light levels and everything. So,
okay. So it doesn't necessarily matter, because based on these qPCR results, crabs that came in uninfected became infected, right?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
It's so there's a level at which you can detect the disease. I mean, you have to have at least one copy of the parasite's DNA in your PCR, or you're not going to get a positive result, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if the crab is infected with 3 hemagglutinin cells total? What are the chances that it's you're going to get it in your syringe, and then the DNA from that's going to end up in the PCR?
Okay.
So there's a point, you know, at which we can't detect it. And so so frustrating, because people have held crabs infected and uninfected in the lab together and hoping they will get infected, the clean ones, and they never do.
Okay.
And then they'll hold them in the lab together hoping they won't get infected, and they do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we held them in the lab for such a short period of time, it's hard to believe that every single crab, that there isn't one uninfected one that stayed uninfected.
Okay.
So my guess would be that they're all infected when they came in. And then there's a guy in Australia who has shown, he does nested PCR. I haven't looked at his paper in so long. The lead author is Gornick, Sebastian Gornick, and I think it's in the PDFs I gave you, but
okay.
It would be one of his, not one of his first papers, might be his second paper. But at any rate, he is working in Australia. There is supposedly a third species of hemagglutinin there, Hemagglutinin australis.
Mm.
But the original description and naming of it, some people are not happy with it and they don't think it's a different species.
Okay.
But at any rate, he has been holding some animals in the lab and he tests them periodically using nested PCR, which you can think of as a PCR of a PCR. So it's very, very sensitive.
Yeah.
And some days they're infected and some days they aren't. Some days they are and some days they aren't. And he interprets that as a very low-level infection that just is right at the limit of detection for his assay.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he can see it and sometimes he can't. And those animals are fine. They don't show any signs of disease or anything.
Okay.
With a conventional PCR, you wouldn't detect it. And probably with a qPCR, you wouldn't detect it. But with the nested, you do.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I took a class last quarter on proposal writing, and that was, like, a pretty good class because it made me, like, look into this project more. And through discussing it with, like, students, people kept asking me why the crabs were wild-caught rather than known uninfected crabs and then inoculated. So
they've never worked with crabs.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So, yeah. So, crabs, there's nobody that, like, just raises crabs. I mean, people raise fish for a lot of reasons. I mean,
mm-hmm.
for food, and also there are a lot of disease studies going. It's an established thing to do. But crabs, not so much. I mean, and they have, yeah, there aren't nearly the number of people who work on crabs, and then it takes space to do that, and then you have to be raising them for that purpose, which means
right.
they just sit there until, you know, for years until you're ready to use them. And it's years. I mean, a crab, oh gosh, let's think. A crab, okay, so this is Bering Sea. Southeast Alaska might be a year less. But in, like, for instance, in the Bering Sea, males reach maturity at 6 to 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have to hold the crabs, you know, like 7 years.
Yikes.
To be an adult. So we had wanted them younger than that. But and it might be a year faster in Southeast because they're further south, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. And the crabs, people are not very good at holding crabs, I've found. It depends. So the females molt, which means they shed their shell. That's a huge, huge deal. They're inseminated by males. They, let's see, these are kind of seedies, so what is their schedule? It's several months before they extrude eggs, then they carry the eggs for a year.
Oh.
Then the eggs hatch and the larvae are planktonic for several months. Then they look like little shrimp, sort of. Then they settle out to the bottom, and they're, they're wanting to eat plankton
mm-hmm.
when they're in the plankton. Then they settle on the bottom, and they're eating God knows what on the bottom. And then as they grow, their diet changes. They're highly cannibalistic. So
wow.
if you had a bunch of crabs together, you'd end up with one, you know,
wow.
a couple months later. So it's a huge space issue. And they're cannibalistic. People think that they just eat each other because, but I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think they're lacking things from their diet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to form all that shell, they need the components of shell. And if you're not giving it to them in their diet, where are they going to get it?
They're buddies.
They're buddies. So, And so it's really hard to raise crabs.
Yeah.
And people who have aquaculture facilities for crabs, they go out and they catch wild crabs and they bring them back and they hold them and grow them.
Okay.
I mean, they don't, it's not very, in China they might be doing, I don't even think they're doing things from larvae. I'm not sure. Last time I looked, they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to do and super expensive.
Yeah.
Because you can't put a single larva in a container all by itself. And you have to keep them clean. Having raised crab larvae, the inside of containers, you get algae and stuff growing on it. And these are little itty-bitty crab larvae. They get that stuff entrained on them, gooped up, and it kills them.
Yeah.
So you have to do water changes, like every, probably twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use an eyedropper and take the crab out and put it into a new container. You have to feed them live food. They won't go after, well, I guess you might be able to train them later to go after dead food, you know, and then the food rots.
Mm-hmm.
The food has to be, they're the type of animal that doesn't go and hunt down something. Their rate of feeding depends on the density of the particles in the water.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to put a lot of particles in there for them to get enough to eat.
Right.
And then the particles die, rot, settle to the bottom, hence the constant cleaning.
Yeah.
So it is really labor intensive to raise crab larvae. And then they go through certain critical periods, and one of them is like when they molt and settle to the bottom. Huge die-offs then, because it's a big deal, and
mm-hmm.
they need to have the stores of the right energy and the right kinds of energy, you know, and I don't think we really know for any crab what the proper diet is.
Yeah.
I mean, we can say, well, we know they eat a lot of this and that, but you don't know how much of which components to give them.
Mm-hmm.
Greg and I once raised larvae from a type of a crab that's related to unjust crab. Over in the school fisheries, we were so excited because we had like 95% survival until they molted and settled to out. And I forget how many. I mean, we were raising them in ice cube trays.
Mm-hmm.
Trays and trays and trays of crab larvae. They molted and settled, and we had almost 100% for a fatality. We had
wow.
like one live and molt to the next stage, and then it died.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. Very hard.
Yeah, because you don't know what to give them.
Yeah.
And, you know, fish, they swim around in the water, you know, and you control the lights or something. But crabs, some of them bury in the sand. Some of them have little shelters. Some of them are out, you know, running around. So you don't give them the proper habitat, and that stresses them, too.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, it's just...
yeah,
so it's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. Just it's super expensive because you can't keep them all in a group together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, fish... If they're all the same size, they don't eat each other, you
yeah.
know? You put a big fish in with some little ones, and you might have some trouble. But these guys, nope, they
yeah.
eat each other.
Were
so.
The crabs in the experiment fed in Juneau?
No.
Why didn't they eat each other?
The plan was to feed them, but we had so much trouble with waterfowling. Well, first of all, the plan was to have smallish crabs, which Chris Sidden thought we could have.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he came in, he had all those big crabs.
Yeah.
So we had, I think, too much biomass in the tanks.
Okay.
Which made it I mean, we could keep the tanks flowing and clean and everything, but as soon as a crab died, it presented a problem. And it fouls the water, and then if you have other crabs that aren't doing so well, you can drive them over the edge.
Okay.
So we were having trouble with water quality issues, particularly in the warm water tank. And we couldn't keep the water clean enough where I felt comfortable putting more biological load in there. Plus, if anybody was hungry, there was dead crab in there to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't too worried about the crabs starving. And if you feed one tank, you have to feed them all.
Mm-hmm.
The cold water tank crabs, you know, you kind of watch them, and it's like, well, they look okay. Nobody's chasing each other. You know, you pull out a dead crab, it's intact. They haven't chewed on it. Nobody's hungry. We're doing okay. And in the cold and ambient, we had really good survival. They would have ganged up and killed somebody if they were, you know, getting hungry.
Yeah.
So they definitely do that. So that's why. If we didn't have all the water quality issues with the warm water crabs when they were dying, we would have fed everybody.
Okay.
But they were, yeah, held for a month, which is not a long time to hold an invertebrate and not feed it. I mean, people hold them for a lot longer and don't feed them. I mean, I'm not saying it's a good practice not to feed them.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you're stressing them all the same way. Nobody's getting fed.
Right.
So
that's true.
Yeah, no, we had fish. I was ready to feed, but there's no way I was putting any more dead stuff in those warm water tanks.
Yeah.
No way. So ultimately,
okay.
It didn't matter. They all died.
Yeah.
For one per tank.
Yeah.
Oh,
insane.
I don't know how we lucked out that way.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Decapod, the podcast dedicated to the Tanner Crab Project funded by NPRB. Check out our website at bittercrab.science for more information.